Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick. You've seen him on TV, heard him on radio, and now Michael Medved has a new book that tells the story of how the hand of God was very evident in the founding of America. We spoke with Mr. Medved before a recent event sponsored by WIND Radio. Michael Medved is a radio show host, political commentator, film critic. His Seattle-based nationally syndicated talk show, The Michael Medved Show, airs in Chicago on AM 560 and throughout the U.S. on Salem Radio Network. Mr. Medved, thank you so much for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. You are the author of a great new book, The American Miracle, Divine Providence in the Rise of the Republic. And it was a miracle that got us where we are.
It is. And I think one of the things that America needs most is to recognize that again, because the hysterical air to our politics right now, that feeling that we have chaos and no one knows what to expect and no one's in charge and people are hysterical and shouting at each other, I think that would calm down a little bit if people would remind themselves of what all our founders believed, that God is in charge and that there is a plan for America. And it's not a plan that was laid out in a corporate boardroom or in the Congress of the United States or even by our great founders. Because here's the interesting thing. A lot of people say, well, yeah, America clearly wasn't an accident. It was by design. But people say the founders were the designers, except the founders themselves, and I make this point very strongly in the book, the founders themselves all believed they were the instruments of the great design, not its authors.
Well, speaking of the founders, even the makeup of our founding generation is a miracle. Somehow, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, Ben Franklin were all brought together at that point in time in history.
Well, you're entirely correct. This is one of the amazing things that people have a tough time explaining. Usually when you talk about the founders, you're talking about six individuals in particular who are outstanding, but there are another 60 who played prominent roles. The six individuals are George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, Benjamin Franklin, and Alexander Hamilton. Now, this constellation of talent arose in a nation of about 3 million. We're a nation of 300 million. And the best that we could do was Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Again, for people who believe that evolution naturally goes upward, right? The truth of the matter is the existence of those people was miraculous, but also their shared belief. And they weren't all Orthodox Christians. Franklin and Jefferson in particular were people who had a very tormented relationship with the idea of biblical authority. Jefferson spent a lot of his time basically crossing out pages of the Bible that he didn't like. But they all believed profoundly in providence. And that's why providence and God are mentioned very prominently in the Declaration of Independence. It concludes with the words, with a firm reliance on divine providence. And they all believed that there was a plan for America. There's another, and I had never, before writing this book, I had never seen this quote, but I found it, and it was one of those things that made the sort of the hair stand up on the back of my arm. Otto von Bismarck, who was the great Iron Chancellor of Germany, said in 1898, "It is the job of the statesman to listen to God's footsteps in history and then to grab his coattails and hang on."
Doesn't seem like our statesmen today are doing that.
No, because many of our statesmen on left and unfortunately some on the right think that they are God. And the point is, Lincoln was so amazing about this. One of my favorite stories from the book is he wrote the Emancipation Proclamation in July of 1862. And he wrote it and he read it to his cabinet. And William Henry Seward, who was another God-haunted man who God had a very special plan for, I'm writing about that right now, as a matter of fact. But Seward said to President Lincoln, he's the Secretary of State, Mr. President, we can't issue this now. We've won, had nothing but defeats. People will think it is a shriek of desperation, of a dying cause. We have to wait for a federal victory. And Lincoln said, you're right, you're right. I'm going to put it in my drawer and wait for God to send me a sign.
And that was Antietam.
It was, but the way that Antietam came was what sent the sign to Lincoln. What happens is Robert E. Lee is advancing into the North, and he has invaded the North. He's going to marching through Maryland. He's headed for Philadelphia, they think. And what happened is they had to switch generals. Lincoln brings in McClellan at the last minute to try to get the troops moving, to interpose the federal army, the Army of the Potomac, between these advancing rebels, close to 50,000 of them, who are marching north. It's a very serious crisis, and it's the closest the South ever came to winning the war. So the 44th Indiana Volunteers have an all-night march. They arrive the morning of September 17th in Frederick, Maryland, and a 42-year-old corporal who had volunteered, left his family, came there, is exhausted after an all-night march. He lies down in the field. His buddy is making a cup of coffee, building a campfire. And Corporal Barton K. Mitchell lies down, puts his left hand to the side of his head, and his hand touches something. And he says, what's that? And he picks up three cigars. Now, you've been marching all night. Those cigars look pretty interesting. So he unwraps the cigars, and he takes them out, gives one to his friend, Sergeant John McKnight Bloss. And they start looking for a light. But while they're looking for a light, Sergeant Bloss notices, hey, what's that paper over there that the cigars were wrapped in? It was General Orders number 181. It's the Lost Dispatch. It was from the headquarters of Robert E. Lee. And it had every detail about his plan of battle, of where the Confederate troops were. And it was that order that allowed McClellan to intercept Lee and to actually stop the Confederate advance in Antietam.
Unfortunately, a lot of the history being taught in our public schools leaves out these facts.
Correct, because what they are trying to teach is exactly the wrong thing. It's the wrong G word. They're trying to teach guilt. And what we should be teaching from history is gratitude. Because, you know, I was thinking about this today because President Trump spoke at the National Prayer Breakfast today. And he said, every nation in the world takes advantage of us. Every nation in the world uses us. We don't get a fair deal anywhere. And without commenting on that, the question really becomes, what is it that allowed us this incredible good fortune to be born in this land, for those of us who are born here, or to come here and to be part of it, to enjoy this status of being in the most powerful nation on earth. And the fact is, it's fascinating to me, and again, this is not in my book, but it will be in the next book. I was just going to say, when Kathleen Lee Bates wrote America the Beautiful, she uses a very interesting word. She says, America, America, God shed his grace on thee. It is the nature of grace that it's undeserved. You can't earn it. It's what Robert Frost called the gift outright. And that is what we enjoy in America. And that is why I wrote this book and what it's meant to teach people. We have to appreciate that grace, and you have to understand it. Because, again, we have blessings as Americans that you and I and everybody else here do not deserve.
Michael Medved, who needs to read The American Miracle?
Well, of course, I'd like every single American to read it, but particularly people who are worried about our country, which I think includes most Americans. And part of Santayana says, of course, famously, those who don't remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And we need to remember the incredible causes for gratitude that we live, and not to try to impose as much our will on history as to do what Bismarck said and listen to God's footsteps and to see what his plan is and how we can take part in it.
Thank you, Michael Medved, so much. God bless.
Thank you. Same to you. And thank you for reading the book and for being so supportive of it.
Our thanks to WIND Radio for allowing us to interview Michael Medved. After the break, Dr. Duke Pesta and the Hand of Common Core in Education.
People are talking a lot about healthcare these days. There are so many changes, so many questions. As Christians, where can we turn for answers? At Samaritan Ministries, we believe the answer is in Jesus Christ, working in the lives of His people, demonstrating Christian community by sharing each other's medical needs, scripturally, faithfully. Here's just part of Brett's story in his own words.
When I reflect on Samaritan Ministries, the biggest thing that stands out to me is that we, as a body of believers, are living out New Testament Christianity. This idea that Samaritan has adopted from the book of Acts should permeate all parts of our lives, not just health sharing. It has a profound impact on people like me and my wife.
Brett is just one of over 200,000 members who are sharing over $23 million in medical needs each month. If you'd like to experience what it's like to partner with other Christians for your healthcare needs, and you'd like to see what other members are saying, visit MySamaritanStory.org.
Hi, this is Pastor McCracken, pastor of the Church of Our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, in Markham, Illinois. For the last 4 years, our church has been struggling to overcome the city's efforts to shut us down. In the midst of all of our legal issues, we felt overwhelmed and discouraged. All we wanted to do was worship the Lord and serve our community. We needed a law firm that not only had the knowledge of the law, but the same commitment of the kingdom of God. The Lord connected us with the law firm of Malcolm Baker. The attorneys at Malcolm Baker have not only provided us with exceptional legal representation and counsel, but have also provided us with the added gift of lawyers who pray with us and seek the guidance of the Lord at every step. After working with Malcolm Baker, we can't imagine working with anyone else.
Hi, this is Noel Stert, an attorney with Malcolm Baker. If your church or ministry has any legal needs, please call us 312-726-1243 or look us up online at malcolmbaker.com.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. I'm Monty Larry. President Donald Trump says he wants to do away with Common Core, but repealing the federal education program, like a lot of things in Washington, is easier said than done. Chances are, kids who attend public schools in Illinois will continue to be subjected to Common Core when they return to their classrooms for the new academic year. While Illinois ditched Common Core PARC exams for high schools in 2016, the roots of Common Core still run deep in the state government education system. Dr. Duke Pesta is an expert on Common Core and heads the Freedom Project Academy, an online virtual school. We caught up with him before a recent Illinois Family Institute Common Core Forum at Revive Church in Collinsville. Dr. Duke Pesta, you travel the nation telling conservatives and faith groups about the dangers of Common Core, the federal government's leftist overreach into our classrooms.
Well, now that Common Core has been consolidated at the federal level, we now know that there are a whole bunch of other programs that are Common Core related that are using Common Core to feed into our schools. One example would be the National Sexuality Education Standards. Your listeners, your viewers can go online and type in the National Sexuality Standards. They can read a 64-page document that was basically conceived in part on the back of Common Core English and Math. And these are this is comprehensive sexual education, which becomes a part of Common Core. They begin teaching your children at ages 5, 6, and 7 really highly controversial sexuality. It becomes part of every aspect of the curriculum. Common Core English and Common Core Math have been used to import this kind of teaching into your kids' middle school and elementary classroom. So with Common Core comes a whole bunch of other ideological programs, including the National Sexuality Standards.
Why does it seem like Common Core is becoming so entrenched?
Well, they set it up that way, that Common Core was conceived, written, paid for, and implemented in the schools. I mean, deeply put into the schools before anybody was told about it. So in other words, teachers went home one May, they came back one August, September for classes, and the textbooks had been removed, that Common Core pedagogy, Common Core worksheets, Common Core methodology was the new law of the land. By the time American moms and dads began to recognize what was happening in the school, it had already been there 2 and 3 years. And so getting rid of it now that people are angry, becomes very difficult. School districts don't have the money to jettison the curriculum now, to jettison the standards, jettison the textbooks, and buy new ones. So it was put in, paid for, deeply embedded, and now that people are screaming they hate it, there's very little ability for the states and the local governments to even pull out of it.
So the public schools are no longer fixable?
You know, I started fighting Common Core 5 years ago with the mindset that we were going to change the schools and change the politics. That's been a failure. This is so deeply embedded now that you're not going to fix them in our lifetime. Your kids, my kids, they are not going to be able to get a Common Core free education. So right now, I would argue that the safe place for this immediate generation of kids is out of the public schools.
So what should parents do?
Get them out, number one. If you can't get your kids out of public schools, then do things to offset Common Core. For instance, spend a few hours every evening with your kids on their schoolwork. Ask them what they've learned in school. Provide alternative histories of America to the ones they're going to get in school, which are very anti-American. If they're getting goofy Common Core math pedagogy, teach them the old-fashioned way to do it, just so they have a basis in that. In other words, if you can't get your kids out, and I do believe most families could, but if you can't get your kids out for whatever reason to the public schools, then make yourself an involved parent. Know what they're doing, know what their homework they're bringing home, and be very diligent, because a lot of Common Core work doesn't come home. It's all done in the classroom. Try to ask your kids what's going on at school.
Are efforts to reject Common Core succeeding, or are the proponents of this just renaming it?
Yeah, no one's getting rid of it. Even the 4 states that technically never took Common Core, Texas being most prominent among them, it's all throughout their schools. So nobody's gotten rid of it. Nobody's ended it. The schools that said they never took it formally, it's in their schools. And when conservative voices get loud enough to force change in places like Florida or Indiana, what the Republican governors of those states have done is simply pay lip service to having gotten rid of Common Core. They turn the education curricula, the program, back to their state departments of education, and they just rename them. They rebrand them. So Florida doesn't have Common Core. They have the Sunshine State standards, which are basically just the Common Core with a Florida stamp on them, and that's what's happening. So politics and money drive this. And the other thing I would say on that topic is these states all were strong-armed, bribed, blackmailed, if you will, through the Race to the Top, federal Race to the Top program, into accepting the standards. Once they took the standards, they were compensated for the choice by lots of federal dollars and lots of private dollars from people like Bill Gates. So the money's there, the infrastructure's there. Even those states that ideologically oppose Common Core, they don't believe they have the resources within their states to remove all those textbooks, to retrain all those teachers. So it's too expensive. This is a classic example of too big to fail now.
How can parents stop Common Core from infiltrating their faith-based school or their homeschool program?
Well, no homeschool and no religious school has been forced to take Common Core. The sad reality is that many of them have done so, because they model their teacher training after what the public schools get, and they're also terrified that if these private Christian schools don't educate their kids in the Common Core way, there's going to be some holdback for them when it comes time to get into college. But the thing that moms and dads need to do is, when you put your kid at a Christian school, make sure, first of all, to be very blunt with the people who run that school. Are you using Common Core? Are you adopting or adapting it? Those are all code word buzzwords. You can't reconcile Common Core and Christianity. You just can't do it. They are so incompatible at what they fundamentally believe. So I would argue that if you can homeschool your kids, great. If you can find a good private school, great. Whatever you can do to take your kids away from the increasingly politicized, increasingly ineffective public schools would be the best thing for them.
But if a parent does decide to homeschool their kids when it comes college time, if those kids don't have Common Core in the background...
Well, your universities aren't Common Core based. College math professors want kids to be able to do math. It's pretty clear that they're not going to be able to do college level math in Common Core. So if your homeschool kids can read, write, do math and science at a college level, they're going to get into those colleges. Don't let the increasing Common Coreification of the public schools frustrate you into giving your kid the best possible education. Knowing things and being able to do things at a high level is always going to benefit them. So I wouldn't let myself be frightened into capitulating.
Your organization, the Freedom Project Academy, can help parents, help students escape Common Core?
Freedom Project Academy is, in some respects, an answer to the problem. We are a complete online homeschool for moms and dads who want to provide a school for their kids, provide an education away from the public school, but don't quite feel like they are ready right now to begin the task of educating them at home. We have live teachers. We beam through the computer into the home. They teach the kid in real time. The kid has classmates. So it's a little school. It's a little virtual school that your kid can be one of 20, 30 students in, with live teachers who do all the grading and all the assigning of work. We encourage moms and dads to the degree they're able to sit there and learn along, help their kids alongside. We can offer courses from kindergarten through high school. We are 100% Common Core free. We don't take a dime of state or federal money, which allows us to be genuinely autonomous. We give a classical education rooted in Judeo-Christian values. The nice thing about online schooling is that they have all the benefits of having classmates, peers, teacher-student interaction, a professional teacher grading work and evaluating students, and yet it's all done in the home. There is no bullying. There is no cyberbullying. There's no sexuality. There's no nonsense. None of that stuff that goes on in the public schools. And the moms and dads are completely in charge of the education. So in that regard, we want to partner with parents to help remind parents. And got to say, by way of closing here, that we are in this mess not because of teachers and not because of an out-of-control federal government. The federal government took advantage of our own weakness. We decided a long time ago in this country that the primary responsibility for educating our kids was the federal government, not us. We decided that somebody else should teach our kids. We shouldn't be surprised that they're doing it now and separating us from our kids. So if we're going to take our kids back, we've got to reassert our primary role in educating them. And that means either putting them in safe schools, using Freedom Project, or if you keep them in those public schools, making sure that you're giving them what they're not getting in those public schools to make them well-rounded, faithful people.
Your website?
FPEUSA.org.
And you'd like to give your presentation in churches.
The nice thing about this technology is we can do more than just find a mom and dad who want classes for their student. We've got wonderful churches across this country that have great worships on Saturday and Sunday, but Monday through Friday, the doors are shuttered. We got moms and dads who have to work two jobs. If we could get those churches to open their doors, we could beam our curriculum through a big screen TV and get 16, 17, 20, 30, 40 kids from that church or that local community school, bring them into the school, set up some chairs. We have moms and dads who are agreeing to volunteer one day a week to just watch the group of kids. It's one way that we can bring our churches back into the struggle for education. We can take back this country, and we can tie the churches into our education for our kids so that they're not just learning secular values, they're also learning Christian and biblical values too. Just get a hold of us at fpeusa.org. Get online and take a look at what we've done. We also, for all the pastors out there, we have lots of churches that we're working with now who open their doors and let kids come in from their church. The kids are completely educated by the teachers on the screens. It doesn't cost the churches a penny except the time and electricity. And give us a call. We can show you how it's working. We can send you videos of how it's working in schools of all different denominations across the country. I really do believe that if we can put the schools and the churches back together the way they had been before the advent of public school, we'll get back to the kind of country we were before.
Dr. Duke Pesta, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Once again, if you would like to connect with Freedom Project Academy, visit fpeusa.org. Thanks for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. Till next time, God bless.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.